got in your brain, you're in the nerd's domain. Come on in, it's about to begin.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Nerd's Domain. I am Matt, and I'm here with Shirley.
Hello.
And Justin.
Hello.
And we are joined by a very special guest, Johnny Brown.
Hello.
Of Indianapolis fame.
Yeah, something like that.
Johnny, we were talking beforehand a little bit about some stuff that you're doing. You're writing a little bit of a blog.
Yes, I am.
And coming up soon is a series you mentioned.
Yes.
You want to tell us about that?
So I have a... I have a dating website coming up talking about love and dating and relationships called Dating While Black. It is from, obviously, my perspective. So I have that coming up, and people can find me on Twitter, The Dating Negro, or they can find the Facebook page, A Dating Negro. They can find it that way. And then the website will launch next month on the 25th when I have a speaking engagement. So
that'll be August 25th.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. This may come out a little bit later. So
yeah, that's true. That's true.
Like middle
yeah.
of
be like, oh yeah, isn't it? And then you right, know, right. it's not there.
Well, excellent. Okay. And this week we're doing a Criterion Collection episode. So this is the Nerd's Domain on the Criterion Collection. We have watched a French animated movie, also produced by some wonderful Czech people, called Fantastic Planet, or La Planète. I don't know. I don't speak French. So the Savage Planet in French or the Wild Planet in Czech. Shirley, would you like to read us a brief synopsis of the film?
Yes. So IMDb says, this animated tale follows the relationship between small human-like ohms and their much larger blue-skinned oppressors, the Drags, who rule the planet of, I have no idea how
Egrim.
To Egrim.
Egrim.
Yeah. Egrim.
I guess. I don't know.
While the Drags have long kept ohms as illiterate pets, this hierarchy shifts after an ohm boy becomes educated, thanks to a young female drag. This leads to an ohm rebellion, which weakens the drag control over their race. Will the ohms and the drags find a way to coexist, or will they destroy each other?
I think that's a solid, kind of solid synopsis. So this is, I think, a couple of things we need to cover first. This is a French film, mm-hmm. Produced by a Czech company, but it is in French and so subtitled. But unlike most subtitles where it was weird, we've seen some movies before where the subtitles have been a little funky. This one was actually pretty solid. And I want to start off saying that I think that all four of us enjoyed the film.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's very much 1973. There are some clear influences from the drug culture of the time, which that's fine, and it has those sensibilities, which again are fine, but it was not unenjoyable. And it's a relatively short film. It's 72 minutes, so you're looking at an hour and 15 minutes of investment here that I think is worth it. So I wanted to start there. I think do you guys all agree?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you guys are doing great. Shirley, do you agree?
I said yes.
Oh no, you didn't. You shook
did.
Your head.
You shook your head.
No, well, I said yes to when you previously asked the question.
So, I don't know. Well, let's talk about, let's get into, I mean, the name of the movie is Fantastic Planet. So let's start there. Let's talk about the fantasticness of this planet.
Okay,
this planet. It is fantastic.
This planet is crazy. Like, Australia has those crazy poisonous bugs and animals that you don't know until, like, you look at National Geographic. Right. I think the flying beak-faced whatever
with
that
the giant
was.
Long tongue?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It was like an anteater, but it was a bird. That was terrifying.
Yeah. I particularly like the plant that had an animal look like it was trapped inside it that was just beating flying things down
right,
for no reason.
Right. That was terrifying.
It wasn't eating them. It was just killing them.
Yeah, or
it would catch them and just throw them on the ground.
Yeah,
or like the little fish like creature that the ohm girls used to dress the main protagonist, like in the after the little trial by combat thing they did,
where he looks like a shrimp, but a shrimp.
And I was like, oh, now he's clothed. Like they didn't just okay. All
what
right.
did they? And those that clothing was wow.
Yeah. Can we talk about the clothing for the ohms after the fact when they got to the rockets,
yeah.
when they built
Go
their own
for
planet?
It.
It was like they went from like this kind of tribal-esque you know, we don't know exactly what we've done, thrown it together look. And then all of a sudden they became very Roman chic, like they had these right. tunics. And I was like, oh.
Well, and that thrown it together look was built by animals.
Yeah.
They had like these silkworms yeah. that literally like yeah. creepily creeped up on you. And then spun your clothes on
while you stood there. And then you, stood there. You came out
like,
clothed.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I guess we're, that's how we're rocking.
This is one of those sort of movies that throws so much weird stuff at you that by the halfway point, you're kind of
yeah.
used to it, and it's you no longer weird. It's like, yeah. oh, that makes sense. There's a creature that just throws this is, birds down.
I don't normally talk through movies. This is one of the first movies that I've talked through this much in a long time. Yeah. That wasn't Dillinger's Dead, but that was because that movie was terrible.
I feel like if you don't talk through it and you're there's not somebody there with you, which I don't know how you managed it all by yourself, Johnny.
Yeah, the second time. Right, by myself.
You seriously have to roll a sanity check. Like, yeah. It is crazy.
There's a lot going
there's
on.
There's some
this.
Stuff you have to work out in well, your head.
I will say that the second time I watched it, because the first time I watched it with someone else through Skype, and then the second time I watched it by myself, eating a pizza with my dog, drinking wine, and I'm sitting there, and I'm watching, and I'm drinking my box wine, and eating my pizza, and I'm like trying to unpack it, and so I'm talking to the dog, but basically talking to myself, and like my roommates walk by, and they're like, "Who are you talking to? Like, are you on the phone?" I'm like, "No, I'm talking about the movie," and they're like, "Oh," and then eventually they would step in for a second, and then they would start talking, and I'm like, "See, it's that type of movie. Like, you got to work through it. You can't just watch it in silence. You got to work through it."
So you did lose your mind a little bit and talk to the dog,
just a tad bit, just a scotch,
just a little.
I'm okay with that.
Right on. So the animals, like the plants, were weird. Like they had these weird barbs, and mm-hmm. They had animals trapped inside them. Like it was, it was like someone went, "Let's design a planet where none of the stuff makes sense to us." Which that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. And they really solidly hit those points.
Well, okay, not to kind of jump ahead too much, but I looked it up, and apparently the Savage Planet of it, the title of it being yeah. Savage Planet. Was because of the moon, not the planet they're on.
Oh.
And the moon is relatively tame compared
yeah.
to the planet they're on.
Except for the population,
on.
Which we'll get to.
Yeah.
I have so much to say about that. There's not enough time for this broadcast, so I'm going to try to condense it.
So I felt like in some parts of it, what is that song by the Beatles? I'm not a huge Beatles fan, so.
There are a lot of songs by the Beatles.
Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, is that?
Yes, that's not, that, yes.
That's the name of the song?
Yes.
This movie was psychedelic like that video.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah, no, I'm with you on that.
This movie apparently aired in America as a second feature along with the Yellow Submarine quite frequently.
Oh.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it really makes sense. Like, when you told me that earlier, I was like, oh. I mean, that's a double feature that people would go see. I would go see that today. If you were like, "I'm going to show the Yellow Submarine and Fantastic Planet," I'd be like, "I will go get my ticket."
Yeah.
So let's get a little more kind of chronological with the story. So we meet, we start with this woman with a baby running around and being stomped at by giant blue feet.
Mm-hmm.
Terrified.
And blue hands.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot. Yeah.
It's blue hands.
And the blue hands are provoking her. And eventually they... The whatever blue creature this is kills the woman and
picks her up and drops her from a high height.
Yeah. And then they pick up the baby and we find out that the dregs or the drags are obviously the dominant species on the planet, and they see these humans, which are tiny. And you know, that's one of the things I did like about this is I didn't notice a huge difference in size proportions. So like the humans stayed pretty much the same proportional size to the dregs, which in the 70s is a tough one. Like we didn't see that a lot in a lot of animated stuff. So we learned that the dregs keep some ohms, which are clearly humans, mm-hmm. as pets. The dregs are weird. They're blue, they have big eyes.
They're like fish heads. Their ears are
gills.
Like fins.
Yeah.
They have
fins.
They have some sort of psychic abilities when they meditate, which gets deeper into this and is important later. And they have a very strange culture. I didn't see anybody working.
No.
It was mostly they were educated, and then they it was education and meditation. That's pretty much what they did.
Right. And then there was the, I don't know, what, meeting of the minds?
Yeah, the
council. Yeah.
The council.
Where essentially there was like five or six people at the council meeting table, and then everybody else was watching.
Green apparatus that kind of floated in the middle of a arena type deal.
Yeah. so weird.
It was
so weird.
But you know what? I will say this much: that, like, the first of all, I like the fact that the humanoid creatures were referred to as ohms, because ohms is actually a play on the French word home, H-O-M-M-E, I believe is how
yeah.
it's spelled.
Yeah.
Meaning man. So, like, I did, like, I, whenever you look at allegorical films, or for me anyway, when I look at allegorical films, I like to see where there are portions of it that are play on words or play on, like, the society or whatever it is that they're trying to allegory, I guess. And so that was kind of great. But one of the cool things that I liked about it was the fact of the matter that you were able to see and acknowledge that, like, there were that the drags was a society that very much were
right.
Technologically advanced, and that they had kind of transcended these archaic values of what the ohms represented
and needs, like,
yeah,
like they
didn't reproduce, yeah, they, like, ate, and they didn't reproduce as much. That was one of the things I found interesting,
right,
that they were, like, yeah, you know, ohms, you know, one of the things that you go throughout the movie is that they're always depopulating these ohm areas because they're overpopulating,
right,
because they're able to reproduce more often than the drags, which I found very interesting,
which is the way it works here on Earth. The longer a species lives, the less likely it is to reproduce, it seems.
Yeah,
it was very interesting to watch this development of a culture they didn't get too deep into, but gave us enough that we could understand that they're different, very mm-hmm. different. And then develop a culture for the ohms. So the main character, whose name is escaping me at this point in time.
Tyr.
Thank mm-hmm. you.
You're welcome.
Tyr is what they call a tame ohm. Mm-hmm.
Domesticated.
And he escapes with this headband that mm-hmm. his owner has. The headband is essentially a school.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something I kind of lost track of in the movie, because at the start of it, he was able to pick up on the readings because his collar was busted.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But later on, everybody can pick up on the readings.
I'm guessing it might have been because the collar was busted, it allowed him, because otherwise the collar might have blocked it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I could see that. Otherwise, because, the normal people. Yeah.
Because otherwise, all the tame ohms would have this knowledge.
Yeah.
And he right. was the only one that they knew of that had this. So.
And the thing is, and it also had to do with coming in contact with their skin.
Yeah.
So he was able to learn it because he was sitting on her lap, but his collar touched it. But when the ohm sat in the middle of it, they were actually all touching inside of the
yeah.
headset.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I could barely hear you, Shirley. So I'm not sure quite what you just said, but
I was like, I can translate for you. So yeah. She simply just busted out the point that that when you needed skin contact in order for the apparatus
right,
to
right.
really work. And so mm-hmm. when we see the scene later of the ohms is what I believe you're referring to,
mm-hmm.
they're able to, the reason why they're able to do is because the right. headsets are really big that they can fit inside of it.
Right.
So they're able to touch one another, and then who's ever touching the outside
Got it.
Can
okay.
connect the information.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah. Sorry. A lot
yeah,
of background noise, and Shirley's a little on the quiet side, but that's okay.
Sorry about that. Why is my phone?
Just a reminder to everyone, Jesse. We mute our phones, Jesse.
Mine is.
Oh, okay.
Right.
The whistling
it's
fits
the
story
guess.
Later.
Yeah, it's the guest that's jacking up.
So we see that the ohm culture doesn't accept Tyr immediately.
No.
The squid people. The priest had a squid head.
Yeah, because he had a squid on his head. And I was like, why does he have... At first,
and
I was like, is that a starfish?
From?
Yeah, I was like, is that a starfish? And I was like, no, I guess it's supposed to be a squid. I was like, but the squid has one eye. And I was like, what's...
They like weird hats in this show.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Apparently.
I mean, it wasn't any worse than the shrimp-like dress that they had Tyr in for a while.
Or the single long horn that was...
Right.
Some of the costumes that Tyr was in when Tiwa had him as a pet, like, I was just like,
Didn't some of them remind you of Cirque du Soleil?
It did. I was like, oh, okay, is this
yeah.
I was like, okay.
Yeah, so eventually Tyr kind of makes his way as he explains what's in the boxes that they've stolen from that the ohms have stolen from the drag.
Mm-hmm.
And what is safe and what's food and what's not and so on and so forth. And they kind of becomes accepted into society a little bit. We get to see some development that there's another gang of, what do they call those? The Hollow Bush?
The mm-hmm. Hollow Bush tribe.
Mm-hmm. Hollow Bush gang. And we see some interaction between those. and then they get attacked by this terrifying cone bird thing that they fight off, but like that thing was scary.
Yeah.
Right.
That was,
I think the initiation into the tribe was pretty interesting because of that animal that they tied to each other.
Oh yeah.
I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
They had like Mauser snapper face things, like the Mausers from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles that they like tied to the front of these people and then tied their hands behind their back.
Yeah, that had these reptilian or snake-like bodies, rather. And it was just like, they were wrapped around. It's like, all right, and basically you're just going to, like, poke at each other with the beaks. And whoever. And I was like, oh, man. And then the thing was like, so when Tyr won the little trial by combat, if you will, he wins it, and then the priest comes over and, like, kills his little animal. It was such a violent movie. I loved it.
How else would you get that critter off of his chest, though, without, like, murdering everybody? Because it was an angry critter.
It was.
Well, wouldn't you be angry if you were baby strapped to somebody
and forced to fight to the death?
Right. So, eventually the dregs come and try to cleanse the park. Because the ohms are living in an abandoned park. And they send in these discs that start shooting off gas that's killing everybody. A lot of them get out.
They have these ohms and like gas masks walking with them for some reason
to root out the ones they couldn't see.
But they never really did anything with them.
I think it was another allegory or another point towards how the ohms are not just being used as pets, but are used as tools and are seen as less than the dregs. So a group of ohms get out. A lot of them die. And then they end up attacking one of the dregs and kill him, which is the first time the ohms have been violent, but they aren't normally violent towards the dregs for good reason. I mean, the dregs are huge and could stomp on them and technologically advanced way beyond the ohms and couldn't kill them with just sending some discs that shot in every which way.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that for a second.
They walked around. They could have just dropped discs where they wanted to, but instead they have so many of these discs.
They had a launcher that was just like, we're going to shoot it in every cardinal direction and then some between them.
It seemed like their weapons just, even in the later attack in the Ohm City, it was like their weapons just didn't really make sense.
Light ray. That was, if they could have done that in the first place. I mean, that was...
Right. Or even the little collection bubble they had later on in the film. I was like, all right, like I can kind of see and get that gig. But I was like, what's this disc situation going on? We're just shooting them everywhere.
So weird.
You know, hope for the best.
So we get to see the dregs or the ohms make a pilgrimage to a new location. There's a little bit of voiceover explanation from Tyr, which is kind of cool. And they end up in an abandoned rocket trash heap, essentially.
Right.
Yeah.
And they start building their own rockets.
Used from the technology, and because of the size difference, they found a, I'm just going to call it a minimizer.
Sure. I mean, that's a good thing to call it. And they take the knowledge they got from the teaching head thing to build their own rockets and blast off.
To the Savage Planet.
Well, no. So they build their own rockets, and then the dregs send their drones of death, a la, 2011 United States military. I was like, wow, this is a little telling.
Yeah, this is a little foreshadowing.
So they send in their drones, and the drones start killing off the ohms. So the two rockets launch and get to the moon. Where?
This is where, ladies and gentlemen, it becomes really, really strange.
The thing is, this whole movie has been freaking weird.
It has.
Before we get to the... We're at the planet, okay? The ohms have gotten off planet A. They're on the moon. All right, now let's dial it back for a second. So there's one part where Tyr witnesses the what I call the mating ceremony, which is where there is a statue of a drag head that's kind of like buried into the ground.
Oh, right, I forgot
and
about
then,
that.
Like, the eyes are open, and then a male and a female go inside. The next thing you know, they're naked, and then they get together in this ball of light and start dancing. And this is them mating, and it's like,
communion.
They also gave out the light.
That's right, they did. They gave it. You're right, because on the top of the head, they would walk up and get the light.
The light.
And then they would go inside the eyes, and then they would copulate. And it was like, what? So then when we got to the moon, I was confused because I was like, well. Are the drags meeting with other alien species mentally in order to get their knowledge? And, like, that's a form of mating? to them as well?
Right.
Or are they mating with other, like that part, or other dragons? That part wasn't really kind of clear to me.
There was a planet of dregs, and this was like an outpost-like thing.
Yeah.
And they were mating with the main group because they didn't want to.
Of headless bodies.
Well, that's just lazy. I mean, even I'll go Uber across town and, you know, take an Uber of shame to have some fun with somebody. Well, I mean, why couldn't they just tell? Okay.
Well, they're beyond that. They've evolved.
Their space meditation can't go that far.
Apparently.
So when they arrive, earlier, I guess we did skip this part, is that when they meditate, they make a ball of energy with them inside of it, and that thing floats around. And we never knew where it was floating
astrally
to.
Astrally project.
Yeah, sure. That makes sense. We find these statues. I'm sorry, the Ohms find these statues, aren't a little freaked out.
They're big, giant, headless statues.
I would be freaked out, too. And then the meditation balls land on the necks of these statues, and then literally in the subtitles it says, "Oh, this is how they copulate." And I'm like, "Oh, what are we gonna see here? Like, this is gonna be weird." No, they just start dancing.
It was weird.
Yeah. Fair enough. It was weird.
It was a waltz.
It was a waltz.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but what?
Yeah, they did the literal mating dance. Like, they just danced. And I was like, oh.
And then this is where the Ohms learned how to defeat them. Because once they defeated the astral selves of the dregs.
Well, they never shot the astral forms. They shot the bodies that they were attached to, which caused an issue with the Ohms or the dregs they belonged to.
Yes.
Their astral connection was broken at that point. Happened was they used the little disintegration ray. They're shooting down the statues. And what you would see was back on the planet, the Ohms would come out of the meditation, and they were literally like blinded because they would walk around. Right. So like they were still disconnected from their astral cells, but they were their bodies at least were cognitively aware of it, which I found kind of interesting because I was like, oh, okay, like they're like, you know, like that's kind of cool that like you can see like how connected they are in this psychic form, but then if that's broken, like it doesn't, you know, it takes a minute for them to reconnect or regroup, but like you can see the disconnection.
Yeah, I really like the way that they made it to where a small group of things on a small planet like Outpost was in effect possibly destroying their entire culture.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because
they
were killing things off planet.
Yeah. And then the movie kind of ends with an explanation that there's now two moons.
Yeah.
Over Yigam or what? YGAM is the name of the planet. Yeah. It's no Organia, but it'll do.
Yeah, we'll make it work.
The one is the moon, the savage planet, I guess, Jesse. And then the other one is a Ohm space station where the Ohms live in peace.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I wonder if that one's the savage planet, actually, because they are savage Ohms.
I don't know. Maybe I can see where you're coming from there.
Yeah, yeah.
Possibly.
Maybe the moon is the wild planet. You know, because they copulate there.
Right.
It was like and that's where they copulate. And I'm like, this. Well, I don't understand. I'm confused even more.
Yeah. Which at the end of it, because through all these council meetings that we kept saying, Tawan.
Mm-hmm.
The girl, was her name Tawana or something like that? Her father kept saying, because he saw Ter getting educated and his ability to pick up that education, he kept saying at the council meetings, well, maybe they aren't as savage as we think. Maybe they're able to learn, and maybe we should try to make peace with them. And then finally at the end, he was like, we should probably make peace with them because they are becoming educated.
Yeah, because
and nobody was listening to
them. Because the thing is, when we see the first council meeting and they're talking about depopulation of the Ohms and this and that, we see on the they have like this big jumbotron in the middle where the council members sit, and then everyone else in the arena sees it. Yeah, and I did too. And they would show images from where the civilization in which they, or the planet in which they got these Ohms from, they cultivated these Ohms from. And what you would see, and what Tiwa's father said, was like there was evidence that they were, that the Ohms were civilized, that they were smart, that they were intelligent, because they had all these structures, and it showed like pictures of like broke down cars and like, you know, buildings that were destroyed and books that were destroyed because, you know, the planet has been eradicated basically.
Right.
So it showed the remnants of this destroyed planet. But in the archaeological remnants of it, Tiwa's father was like, hey, like they're obviously intelligent because they had civilizations. They were vast. It's just, you know, due to overpopulation or just, you know, kind of greed or like being, you know, too technically advanced too fast or whatever. Did they become destroyed themselves and kind of de-evolve?
Yes.
And he kind of brought out the point of like if they as drags weren't careful, that they could share the same fate and perhaps maybe them coming together as a cohesive, peaceful unit, that they could avoid their own demise. And of course, no one listened, and so, you know, it happened.
Yeah.
Almost.
Almost, yeah. It was, so, that, I mean, that's the basic plot of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. So beyond the weirdness of Egrem, or I don't know what I'm going to call it Egrem now.
Planet Y.
The planet Y. In the weirdness of that, there was a lot going on, and it kept us, I feel like it kept us off kilter enough that the slowness of what we would see of the story didn't matter.
No, there was enough going on in the background alone to keep you entertained.
Right. So, I mean, I didn't notice the story. I mean, the story is very simple. There's only five voice actors in the whole thing. I just looked at that.
Oh, yeah. Really?
It was the adult tier, the child tier, Tiwa, her father, and another council member. That was it. So, I mean, there were some other, like, background voices, but there were never more than a couple of people talking. I found it really weird, but still very telling on how we handle things and how we deal with groups that we think that we're better than.
When shows like this are subtitled, I typically have a hard time because I want to watch a show because stuff is going on that I don't want to look away from.
Right.
But like you said, there was so little talking that I never actually felt like I was missing the story because I had to look away from that crazy plant that is eating everybody to see that they're saying, oh my God, they're eating us.
Yeah.
They just didn't say, oh my God, they're eating us, because you could tell that.
Yeah. There wasn't a lot of supposition, and there wasn't a lot of, like, there was some narration, but not a ton. Like, it was either there or they were talking and about something else while something weird was going on. Like, there wasn't a lot of, you know, explanation on things. So I appreciated that. I guess in a lot of ways, this is a very, like, minimalistic, simple movie, but still very, there's a lot going on. A lot going on. That creature in that cage was weird. That was whacking the birds out of the air.
Yeah, because I was like, it's the face of a heart with an elephant trunk that's inside of a flower type cage type of tease, and it was like beating things down. I was like, I don't get it.
And beating them down for fun. Yeah. It wasn't like beating them down to then eat them. It was beating them down for fun, then laughing about it.
He would just grab them and like slam them on the ground.
And I was like, I don't get it, but all right.
Yeah.
Like, I'll take it.
Okay, so I don't know. We've gone over the plot. What were your guys's, other than it being weird, what were your guys' impressions?
I absolutely loved it. I mean, it was amazing.
Okay.
I know, just like Jesse, the subtitles distract me from watching. I would watch it again just to pick up on the things that I missed.
Okay. Right on. Johnny?
Well, subtitles don't distract me, especially when you understand the language, so you can just kind of just
I guess that helps.
Yeah, keep
or
that
I
moving.
Or I could learn French.
Yeah, right, cheater. Keep that moving. And well, I will say that I did cheat the second time I watched a dub version of it, but the first time I watched it, and the person I was watching it with, like I said, we were watching it through Skype, and he would sometimes be like, oh, well, like, do you mind if I rewind? And I'm like, no, they said X, Y, Z, so on and so forth. And he's like, oh, and he's like, well, that's cool. He's like, so then he would just wait. And then he's like, all right, these are all the points that I missed because of the subtitles. But other than that, like, I enjoyed it. I thought it was really, it was a really simple yet, in my opinion, well-crafted and executed film. And it wasn't an allegorical type of film that could get lost throughout the years. It's just as you could see the relevance of it in 2017 as you could back then in 1973. And even though, you know, we're in America, they were France, you know, whatever. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You're able to still see the relevance of it.
And it is nice to see that the allegory is not, in 73, is not heavy, heavy communism.
Right.
Especially since it was part Czech, part French.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, this could have been all about communism, which you could make that allegory. Like, you can make some connections there, mm-hmm. but they didn't grab the thing at mm-hmm. the time. They just made some points about human existence that are important. Yeah. So yeah. I appreciated that, too.
Yeah, it looked at it from the human, from the story was crafted around the human experience and the human point of view. It wasn't, like you said, it wasn't this allegorical thing that was about ideology and how it affected the humans. It's more of like how the humans were treating one another because of their differences and the ideologies of the difference.
Real quick, I did want to mention that we found this not on Hulu, like we had been watching our Criterion Collection movies, but instead, and now all of the Criterion, the stuff that was on Hulu is no longer available. The Criterion Collection itself has moved over to a new streaming service, oh, I guess new to us. It's been around since November last year, called Filmstruck. And Filmstruck is Criterion Collection and then a bunch of classic movies through Turner Classic Movies. That super solid. Like, lots of stuff to watch there. A lot of old movies, a lot of good stuff. And then the Criterion Collection, I think there's more on this than there were on Hulu. Hulu had a decent group, but there are more seemingly here. And this was, other than we had some sync issues, but I think that was the computer we were using that was HDMI'd into the TV. There was some audio sync issues. I didn't see any issues with anything else either. Mm-hmm.
And it was a, kind of a weird enough movie that we weren't sure if there were issues until it went a little too far.
Right. So we were like, where's that grunting coming from? when the ohms were fighting, mm-hmm. there was grunting, and I'm like, what's going on here? Right. So, I want to say we did get to watch that on Filmstruck. If you want to check out Filmstruck, that's filmstruck.com. Lots of great movies there. Definitely should check that out. Johnny, you watched a dub version, mm-hmm. which I don't think is the Criterion versions typically don't dub.
Right.
They usually are leave the original language in mm-hmm. and then subtitle or in the case of like Dillinger is Dead, mm-hmm. go ahead and overdub the original language in French mm-hmm. and then subtitle that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was. How was the dubbed version? Was it easier to follow? Well, I mean, was there a vast difference between what they were saying?
No, because the dubbed version was literally they were smart about it. And whoever, I don't know who dubbed this. One of the perks of being a college kid is that you can go to a film professor and be like, hey, there's this movie that I just watched in X, Y, and Z. And usually they have a dubbed version of it.
Oh, okay.
And so that's how I was like, X film professor, I just watched this movie. He's like, oh, I got a dubbed version of it. I was like, well, that's why I was calling you. So it synced up well. And also, like, literally it was the same talking point-wise as it was in the original language. So, like, there wasn't any over-translation of anything. It literally was like, if Tyr in the narration only said, like, three words, then there were literally, you know, just the base three or four words to cover what the translation was. It was a literal, flat-out translation.
Good. So we didn't lose much.
Yeah, you didn't lose much at all. Okay. And so it didn't... Because that's the downside with dubs is that sometimes it takes you out of it because the opposite happens is that you get lost in translation, basically.
Okay. Well, good. Let's go through this and give it five out of five creepy... creepy
bird
cone
monsters.
Birds with giant long tongues. How many those would you give it, Shirley? What do you think?
I would definitely give it a three, solid three.
A solid three?
Yeah.
You want to expand on that at all?
No, I never expand upon my ratings. No, I really enjoyed the graphics and the art within the movie, as well as the message that it conveyed.
Okay. Jesse, what about you?
Well, when we originally watched it, I had an initial reaction. And the more I think about it, the more I liked it. And I want to give it a 4.5.
Okay. You dropped yourself down.
I would give it a solid 5 if it wasn't the uncomfortable nudity for the Western audience.
Yeah.
There are certain people I can't request to watch this because of that, because I know that they would have a negative reaction
Let's talk about that for just a second. This is very much a French film, so there is some nudity, but it's never sexualized, and it's definitely not overly sexualized.
No.
Yeah. But it's just like... It's just part of the culture.
The ohms are in that standard, like, one strap... Mm-hmm. What do you call that? Man...
Toga-type thing?
Toga-type thing.
Yeah, kind of.
The dregs wear clothes.
Bother me at all, but I know people that would enjoy this film wouldn't enjoy that aspect.
So there was some exposed breast, and then there was almost exposed genitalia in a couple of spots when they strip Tyr out of his shrimp outfit.
Oh yeah.
So that was weird, but definitely something to note because it is very French and very mm-hmm. like that's. Perfectly fine there.
But this is a movie I will think about often while watching other films now. Okay. And it was beautifully animated. It told a good story in a short amount of time.
So you're at a 4.5.
4.5.
Okay. Johnny, what about you?
So, overall, when you add my score up, it comes up to a 5. But when I first watched it, I was like, I don't know what I've watched. Let me unpack this for a second. And I was completely bent on like just 2.5 stars at best. And then when I saw it again and was able to look at it overall, I was like, I would add those other 2.5 stars and give it a total 5.
Okay.
Because part of it is that the first half, when I first saw it the first time, it was because the film was, in my opinion, aesthetically very pleasing. It was beautiful. It was for a animated slash somewhat claymation mixture type of deal. It didn't look overly wonky. Like, it fit the thematical theme of what they were going for, and I appreciated that. And then later when I watched it again, and I was able to really kind of get a total feel of what the intent of the creators were in the whole story and put everything in perspective, I was like, all right, like, for me, I can see why it's in the Criterion Collection now. As whereas when I first watched it, I was like, I'm not really sure. Like, who's Criterion? Like, why are we, what is this? But then, like, I was able to see why it should and is in such a collection.
Okay. So you give it five.
I give it 5 of the shrimp flying, whatever.
The terrifying cone.
Terrifying creepy cone thing. That
flying
looks like a,
bird monsters with giant long tongues.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah. So I'm going to give it a solid 4. And this is based mostly off my preference. Like, I will think this movie is going to stick with me. I think that's the same for all of us.
Oh, God, yeah.
I don't think this is something we're going to forget easily, much like an encounter with a great old one, or
I see it every time I close my eyes.
This is a solid 4 for me. I don't know that I'll watch it again anytime soon. Although Shirley sounds like she wants to see it again, so we may watch it again sometime in the near future. But it's definitely something that I felt was worth for the Criterion Collection. I agree with you, Johnny, on that. Like, this was something that I can enjoy that way and not come away and be like, well, this was artsy for no reason. Like, we've watched a couple, like 39 Steps and another French movie. I'm just like, wow, these are the artsiest arts films that have ever arted, and I don't understand.
Dillinger's Dead.
Well, I wasn't even going to touch Dillinger's Dead because that was that.
They put an art film in the middle of an art film.
There's a hand dance. but this film, like, as artsy as it was, had a story it wanted to tell and points it wanted to make. And the animation wasn't top-notch like we expect today, but it was solid for what it was. It wasn't overly movement, or like there wasn't a ton of movement, but it was when it needed to, it did what it needed to do, and it did it well. But then the weirdness, because it was so static sometimes, the weirdness of the landscape became even weirder. Yeah. And I don't think in a modern art style, I don't think that same weirdness comes through that way. It would be more creepy and less, like, strange and fantastic.
You see, that's what really drew me in, is I miss that art style. I like hand-drawn animation.
Right.
I'm not a fan of, well, I like Pixar films, but I'm not a fan of their animation choices all the time.
Yeah.
Or any of the time.
So, overall, I'll give it a 4. This is definitely something to check out. We do not have a chosen Criterion movie yet for the next one. With Filmstruck, we just haven't had a chance to sit down and make sure what was on there first before we do that. So we will let you guys know about that soon. But otherwise, Johnny, we can find you again. Where can we find the dating Negro?
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter under @thedatingnegro. And then you can find me on my Facebook page currently. A Dating Negro, and then that'll have also information for the upcoming website as well.
All right, and it's, as always, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdsdomain, and then you can also find us on Twitter @thenerdsdomain. You can go to nerdsdom.com and check out the links to our other podcasts there. Don't forget, we do 3 other podcasts. Go fund this, the There Are 4 Lights and Masks of Nyarlathotep, and you can find us all there. Shirley is at SNED70. I'm at Quiet. And Jesse is at LeafStalker313, all on Twitter.
Occasionally.
And I think that'll do us tonight for the Nerds Domain podcast and the Criterion Collection. And we will talk to you guys real soon.
Bye.